Okay, I changed the title a little bit, you know. Now, I'd like to talk about the vortex shapes, waves spinning in the neutron star crust. And now you heard a lot about the glitch, so I'll just pass the glitch, okay? Because I have only 40 minutes or so. I'd like to mention the PMP model for glitch a little bit. Okay, here the inside the neutron star. Now we have three neutrons which are in the superfluid state here. One is in the crust and the other is in the core. Since the neutron star is rotating, now of course superfluid is also rotating. So in order for the superfluid to rotate, the vortices have to be formed, you know. Okay, here are the vortices. And how many vortices we need? It can be calculated very easily. Okay, the superfluid vortices are quantized. This is a quantized circulation. And this is a total circulation. This is a total number of vortices. Then we get, roughly speaking, okay, the number of vortices is in Clark and Vera almost 10 to 17. Okay. Now I'd like to explain a little bit about pinning. Here,
we definitely
look out and stand in. This is vortex, and this is line or or something like line, you know. And this is nucleus, and this means core. This means atom. So atom, core, nucleus. Okay. I have to explain about pinning, okay? Not Japanese. Okay, let me explain, okay? Here the vortex, you know? Inside the vortex, the core of the vortex is, if I exaggerate, almost normal. If I exaggerate, okay? And the superfluidity or the gap energy inside the nucleus, here the nucleus, inside the nucleus is less than that in outside the nucleus. So if we compare the gap energy, sort of condensation energy inside the nucleus and outside the nucleus, then we have some difference. Okay, that difference is about 1 MeV per nucleus. So now if the vortex overlap with the nucleus, then we can save energy about 1 MeV per nucleus. Then nature would like to go to the lowest energy state, so we'd like to get together the vortex. Vortex want to get together with the nucleus. That is a pinning.
What is the nucleus saving NEV?
Excuse me?
I didn't understand why the nucleus saves an NEV by having the vortex go through it.
No, the vortex saves an NEV by going through a nucleus.
Yeah.
Okay, why?
Why means why it, you know, the gap energy is different in between outside the nucleus and inside the nucleus. That's the reason, okay?
So that difference is big, right? Because the whole gap is about 1 MeV, is that right? So this is about a factor of 2 difference? I'm asking that. So you said the difference in the gap energy between being in the nucleus and outside the nucleus was 1 MeV.
Oh yeah, I mean...
But isn't the whole size, isn't the gap 1 MeV also when you're... Just outside
It's not 1 MeV per nucleon. It's 1 MeV per nucleus.
Per nucleus.
Okay, yeah. I think the other way to say is that the neutrons have to be normal in the core of the vortex, right?
Yeah.
So there's already some normal neutrons in the nucleus, just in its equilibrium. So it's easier for the vortex goes through the nucleus, it needn't make as many pairs.
What is the ratio of Fermi pressure of the normal neutrons in the vortex core compared to the centrifugal pressure on the superfluid at the inner boundary?
Putting the at inner boundary.
I think I remember that the kinetic energy of the nucleons, of the neutrons, going right around the core is about the gap energy, which is smaller than the Fermi energy by a factor of 100 or so.
The Fermi energy is about 100 MeV. Yeah. And in the pin and unpin model, they support, for some reason, the many vortices get unpinned. We don't know why we can have such kind of large unpinning suddenly, but they assume we need about 10 to 13 vortices get unpinned. Then the vortices moves outward a little bit and then get unpinned again. But from this movement, the angular momentum is transferred from superfluid to charged component, I mean crust. Then, since the angular momentum is, crust obtained angular momentum, then the crust is spun up. That's a grid. And Ari et al. Calculated the relaxation after the glitch. This relaxation, this day and the relaxation of omega dot. They obtain the beautiful fit to the observation. So they think the pin unpin model is very promising for a glitch as a glitch model. Now I'd like to come to a pinning strength, you know. Besides the pinning force, Magnus force exerts on the vortices. If this is it, Magnus force is a Bernoulli force. And here, the superfluid velocity, this is the velocity of vortex. So if there is some velocity difference, the Magnus force acts on the vortex. So we think just after glitch, the superfluid decouples from the charged component. Then, due to the magnetic braking, only charged component or crust is decelerated. Then, since superfluid decouples, the velocity difference builds up as the crust spin down. And we estimate the velocity difference just before the glitch by this equation. Here, the omega dot is the deceleration rate, r is the radius of a neutron star, and this is a glitch interval, like 3 years. Then we have 10 to the 4 centimeter per second. Maybe this may be the velocity difference between normal component and super component, superfluid just before the glitch. Then, we can calculate, using this formula, we can calculate the Magnus force acting on the vortices. It is about 10 to the 15 dynes per centimeter. So, the pinning force can hold the superfluid vortices against Magnus force. So we require So pinning force should be larger than this Magnus force in order to hold the vortices against the Magnus force. This is required. Okay. Then I'd like to little bit mention how these pinning forces, the strengths of pinning forces have been estimated. Okay, first a very simple one, made by Ali. Here, this xi is a coherent length. Approximately speaking, it's a radius of superfluid vortices. Okay. Then, as I said, pinning energy is about 1 MeV. So the coherence length, the size, the radius to move or distance to move from the center of a nucleus to the outside, the radius of a nucleus and the coherence length is almost comparable. So we use the radius. Let us use the coherence length for typical lengths, you know. Then lattice constant is about this length, you know. Then we divide by xi, and in order to have force per 1 centimeter, we divide again this one by lattice constant. Then we have 10^17. Dyne per centimeter, yes?
This assumes that the vertex is aligned with the lattice structure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But is this really the case? I mean, I would have thought that most likely the vertex would be slightly misaligned in the lattice below. So.
Slightly misaligned is okay. Slightly misaligned. And
but the vertex is straight, right? It cannot bend. Is this correct?
I'll come to that later, okay? Bending, I'll come to that later, okay? So, this 10^17 centimeter is enough to hold the vortices against pinning force, against Magnus force. But then, I'd like to skip this part, okay? I'd like to go to this one directly right now. We don't need this one right now, okay? Then Jones said, suppose the vortex is completely rigid. Then we can have equal number of pinning sites on either side of the on right side and the left side, on either side of the vortices, we have a same amount of pinning site. Then on the whole, we have, when we accumulate or when we sum up all the pinning forces, then we have zero as a total. Okay? So maybe no pinning force is zero. Then Link and Epstein comes. No. It's vortex is not completely, is not 100% rigid. Okay, it's a tension is finite. Then, as he mentioned, now we have vortex bending, something like this. You know. Then, between bending and bending, we call it this kink. Between kink and kink, we have a very strong, you know, pinning. So
I didn't follow this. Why is it energetically favorable to have these kinks?
We need some energy to produce kink. But if these, you know, if the vortices are pinned to these nuclei, we can save a lot of energy.
What
why do the lines have to, why can't the lines go straight along? Why can't the vertices go straight along in the nuclear?
They are, we don't have so much, we can't save energy. No, he has no opinion.
Only one per
nucleus, yeah.
Is it simply the orientation of the rotation axis with respect to the crystal lattice? I mean, that's, that I think is pretty simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Then again, then John wrote a few papers on opinion again, and he said, I'll come to that later more in detail, okay? But he said waves are excited. That is called Kelvin wave. Kelvin wave are excited in the vortices. Because of this wave, when we take a time average of pinning force, the pinning force is almost zero. I mean, the pinning force, time average pinning force are many, many orders of magnitude smaller than that required. And when the coupling between nucleus and vortex is strong, kink may form. And this kink may propagate. So because of this, you know, wave propagation, also, I'll explain about that later, also almost no pinning is realized, attained, you know. So he said maybe pinning may not occur. And in the inner crust of a neutron star, and the glitch may originate, not in the crust, but in the core, or somewhere.
Ask a couple questions here.
Okay.
You're claiming that, in fact, the kinked configuration is energetically favored because you get more pinning sites.
Uh-huh.
But now you're claiming that, in fact, the potential energy in the kinked vortex is enough to unpin it from the pinning sites, and I guess for the wave to propagate. So I don't quite, there seems to be an inconsistency there. I mean, it sounds like the initial assumption that you gain more energy by the additional number of pinning sites that you lost by deforming the vortex was wrong.
It's just that you can displace the vortex line transversely to itself by propagating a kink. So if you look at this diagram of this wave in vertex, you can imagine propagating the skin along the lattice, but this will result in transverse motion of the vortex.
You have more passes to tunnel through the mouth because it can hop. And you're making a kink, it can hop from one energy member to another. And so it just has more routes to travel from.
Okay. Anyhow, I'll come to that later. So, then I'd like to show our calculation first. Then I'd like to make a comment on their work. Now, first, I'd like to show the coordinate we adopted. And the XY coordinate is fixed in the crystal, okay? Here the crystal. And the main axis of crystal is almost, is D. And here we consider the rotational axis is almost comparable, almost parallel to main axis, okay? Then, the pinning potential is expressed in terms of exponential minus something, you know. But we transform that one into a Fourier series using a reciprocal vector. And we consider along the axis, only we consider average behavior, okay? And only we are interested in the displacement in the xy perpendicular direction to the vortex, okay? Then we consider only reciprocal vectors contribute to the Fourier expansion. This is one of this one. And here z is the wave number, and this a is the lattice constant. And we are now we change the variables, because it's very convenient to change, understandable, because now xy is displacement, but we consider the displacement in the in the direction of reciprocal vector. Then we can have a very simplified, very beautiful, depends on person, but you know, I mean, it's a simple equation, okay? Then we try.
What is it red? Huh? The right hand side is red.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we try to solve this equation, okay? First, I'd like to show the stationary. Stationary means time derivative part is zero, okay? Stationary shape of vortex lines. Then that basic equation can be integrated, and we can have this kind of equation. This is very simple one. It almost corresponds to the particle motion in some potential. Here the potential well, and here this one may be interpreted in terms of kinetic energy. So this motion, this equation is solved easily. And constant corresponds to a sort of total energy. And for our simplicity, first we ignore the pinning part, vortex, not pinning, Magnus part.
What is the variable phi zero?
Phi zero is the displacement from the from the pinning center.
Okay.
In terms of angle, I mean the displacement is divided by a lattice constant. Okay. And solutions are classified in terms of the angle. In terms of angle between a rotation axis and between rotation axis and main axis of lattice. Suppose angle is zero, then we have a completely straight line, straight solution. Here the z axis, and here the pinning center. Okay. Then we incline a little bit the vortex relative to the main axis. Then we can have kink. Okay. In this case, we incline infinitesimally from the main axis. We incline the vortices infinitesimally from the main axis. Then we can have an analytic solution in this way. This integration formula is in the book, so it's easy. I don't have to think, you know. Just look for. Then we can from this one we can understand how large is a kink, and the kink's size of a kink is about the 10 times the lattice constant. then we increase the angle more.
So stationary here means the kink shape is constant, and also the kink is not moving relative to the lattice?
Yes. Then I increase the angle. Then we have to have many kinks. This is the direction of rotation axis. This is the direction of main axis. Now I'd like to move on to the waves excited in the vortices. Now I put the perturbation into the steady stationary state, and we linearize the equation and give a plane wave. Then we can get a dispersion relation. So for simplicity, first let's consider magnetic force and tension. Let's ignore the pinning force. Then, the motion of vortices in the x direction gives the force in the y component. I mean, the magnetic force in the y component. That force should be balanced with, in this case, tension. Also, vortex motion in the y direction yields the force in the x direction. That force also should be balanced with the tension. Then we have this kind of solution. The dispersion relation is given by this one. Here, p is wave number and omega is the angular frequency. And this wave gives a helical motion. Now, rotating the wave propagates along the axis, helical motion. Okay. Then let's consider the magnetic force and the pinning force. Then ignoring tension. Then also in this case, pinning force gives a sort of pulling force. And magnetic force gives us some centrifugal force. Then, because of this balance, the vortex rotates. The rotation velocity is rotation frequency is given by this term. If we use the canonical parameters, the cosine phi naught expresses the distance between the pinning center. So if the pinning, if it is in the pinning center, this one phi is zero. Okay. Now we consider all of forces, tension, magnetic force, and pinning force. Then we obtain the dispersion relation. And dispersion relation is given by the sum of these two terms. So this is quite understandable because we have pinning force that is spring, and also we have a tension, so we now have two forces. So that means in order to balance with these two forces, the vortex has to rotate faster. Then I'd like to show, but here the dispersion relation. Here the wave number, and here the angular frequency. And we know it should be noted that there is a minimum for waves allowed. That minimum is, as I said, it's if the vortex is very close to the pinning, is close to the pinning center, that minimum frequency is 2.1018 radian per second. Okay. Now, based on this, on this result, now I'd like to comment on the John's claim. Okay. John said in the following way, Kelvin waves may be excited, that the dispersion relation of a Kelvin wave is given by this one, not by the one which we obtained. And then this is obtained for a free vortex, okay? And then he calculated the time average force. The time average force is much, much smaller than that required, okay? Then he said, you know, basic frequency excited may be given by this one. A over Vs, suppose the vortex is moving with superfluid. So in order for the superfluid to go from one lattice plane to another, next lattice plane, it takes this time, you know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So for the excitation frequency, he assumed this frequency. And he assumed this wave with this frequency may be excited. But as I said, if we include the pinning term, pinning force, the frequency which is allowed in the vortex wave has minimum, which is much, much larger than this one, two orders of magnitude larger. Anyhow, then he thinks when the coupling between our nucleus and the vortex is strong, kink may form, and that kink may propagate along vortex axis. Okay, here the vortex with many kinks. Here the lattice plane. Okay, suppose kinks moved in this direction. Then kinks moved in this direction. Then our vortex moved. Motion of the kink in the z direction gives the vortex y displacement. Displacement in the y direction. So in order for the vortex to keep up with superfluid velocity, superfluid is flowing in this direction, in the y direction with the velocity of Vl, okay? Then following equation has to be satisfied. Okay, kink propagates along the vortex axis. This one, as I said, gives the right component of velocity. And vortex, in order for the vortex has to move with the same velocity with superfluid, then we need this. We need this kind of relation satisfied. Here, the wavelengths in the d direction, that means distance between kink and kink. So during this kink velocity, during this time, the one that is the vortex moves in the y direction, one lattice distance, one lattice constant. Okay, then kink velocity should be given by this equation. Just omega star, omega asterisk is the one which I mentioned previously. Then we consider the assuming a Kelvin wave, we consider the group velocity or propagation velocity, a phase velocity. the phase velocity or a group velocity is given by this one. Then omega star and then this kind of wave velocity may be realized by a Kelvin wave. Okay. I think that's his claim. Excuse me? P is the wave number of waves.
Okay. Why doesn't this kink motion simply bring the vortex lines into alignment with the lattice rather than necessarily leading to a secular radial creep? Because I mean, the density of vortex lines is basically giving the vorticity movement, right? And can't you have rotation in the superfluid, motion in the superfluid, just purely in phi direction, defined by the overall sense of rotation of the neutron star, and have gradients in d phi, both in r and z, in such a way that you align the vorticity locally with the lattice? So you would, I think, introduce additional gradients other than you would, the ones you would most naively think are present.
But you know, if suppose you know, here the vortices kink and here the kink, but we have no energy difference is almost zero.
I think it's essentially a Taylor-Proudhon theorem. Everything's going to end up rotating themselves along the order. Except for microscopic irregularities, and we have to learn.
Let's discuss it later, okay? Chris?
In equilibrium?
Yeah, go ahead. In equilibrium, these are adiabatic changes. Well, I'll see 10 to minus 40 centimeters a second.
And I'd like to point out a few problems. First, let's assume the describing relation he adopted. Even if we adopt his describing relation, okay, the phase velocity depends on the wave number. That means dispersive. So once, even if kink is formed once, so during the propagation, kinks may be smeared out. This is one comment, okay? And as I said, you know, if we include the pinning force, then the Kelvin wave has a minimum frequency. And this minimum frequency is much, much larger than what he adopted. And this slow, very slow Kelvin waves may not be excited and may not propagate except far from the pinning site where the pinning force is almost zero. Next, kink propagation. In order for the vortices to move with the superfluid, this relation is required. Then let's adopt our dispersion relation. Then the group velocity, in order for the group velocity to be equal to the kink velocity, the large omega is required. And of course, this means we need the excitation mechanism for this Kelvin waves with large frequency. Right now, we don't know, and it seems to be a difficult. So, I'd like to come to a conclusion. I guess if we include the pinning force and the effect of the pinning force, not guess, it is sure that the dispersion relation should be changed. So I guess that John's conclusion may need to be modified. But furthermore, so pinning problem, pinning or unpinning, is still an open question. For example, we need to study more. For example, especially on the effect of microcrystals, you know, main axis, some crystal, the main axis of some crystal may not be equal to the vortex axis, rotation axis. So we consider such kind of effect. That's all. Yes.
It seems to me that this vortex creep is definitely a quantum mechanical phenomenon. And the minute you include quantum mechanics, you have to include tunneling in the creep. Now, one main feature of tunneling is that it depends not only on the depth of the energy minimum, but the separation between the two. At the more separated they are, the probability of hopping from one to the other is exponential in the separation, right? Whereas the pinning force is only linear. And
there's nothing quantum mechanics. The only thing that's quantum mechanical is the circulation around the vortex. And if you think of it as an ideal fluid, once you establish that, classical hydrodynamics preserves it.
Oh, the pinning is the pinning.
The pinning is. But the hydrodynamics and the kinks and all that is nothing.
I know, but I'm talking about the unsticking from one pinning side and re-sticking to another. I mean, that's an essential element in this whole business,
right?
The
vortex line is stiff, so they talk to each other.
What?
You pin here and pin there, but the vortex line tune is very stiff. It doesn't like that, so they communicate classically very well.
I'm talking about the moving in vortex sites, the unpinning of them.
Yeah, I'm saying that the forces on the pipe over here, think of the vortex line of the pipe, are immediately felt along the pipe. It's a very stiff thing.
Fine, that's but what fine. That is, I don't think it's going to affect my question, which is, it seems to me that the effect of strength of pinning increases as the density of the lattice goes down. You know, the fewer pinning sites you have per unit volume, the harder it is to pull it off one pinning site and have it tunnel to another one. Now, maybe you haven't considered tunneling, but it seems to me that you should.
There's no tunneling in here. There's no exponential tunneling. This is just propagation via the fact that you've got waves, which, as far as I can tell, the temperatures you're at, there's some spectrum of waves that are excited because the minimum energy is small relative to the theory. Is that right? H bar omega p, H bar omega min is much smaller than K2. So there's a spectrum of sighting. If the wave's always oscillating, there's always a wave present.
The pinning force that was discussed at the beginning, how is that defined exactly? I assume it's the amount of force that required to extricate the vortex line from a column of pinning sites and basically unpin it.
Basically what?
Unpin it. You define a pinning force per unit length.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I wrote it, it was 10 to 17 dynes.
Uh-huh.
centimeter. I assume that meant if I take a centimeter of vortex and I want to move it through a crust, I need that force.
Yeah.
No, but it's, you should think of it like a zipper. I mean, you want to open your zipper, you do it one at a time. It doesn't take that much force. If you want to, by brute force, open all the links of the zipper at once, it'll take you a lot.
Fine, I'll do one at a time.
That's what
but,
I'm doing.
But undoing it.
He's unzipping on one side and zipping on another.
So, let's see, so I'll have a question. It's degenerating. So,
I think it's getting better.
So you got another one?
Okay, I think we should go on to the heat stop. You ready, Keith? We can take a little break. You guys want to take a break for 5 minutes? 5 minute break?
How long do you think you're talking to them
now? You have no idea. Let's take a break. So let's come back in about 5 minutes. So 5 minutes.